Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Welcome back. I hope you're well. Do you know what happened 76 years ago yesterday? 76 years ago yesterday. And then we broaden that out to consider the topic, actually this whole week. And so excited about our guest today, a new friend for the show, and an important topic and something that I didn't realize it. I didn't think about it. I knew it was out there, but hardly on my radar screen. And so we're going to unpack this particular event and all that it means for humanity and for us as Christians here in the United States and around the world. So we're going to do that today with Dr. Susan Michael. She's the director of ICEJ USA for more than 35 years, just reading from her bio right quick. Susan has pioneered the development of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem in the United States and around the world. She currently serves as the ministry's USA director and is a member of ICEJ's International Board of Directors. By the way, that's us.icej.org. We'll mention that a few times. She's got a master's degree in Judeo-Christian studies, as well as a bachelor's degree in theology from Oral Roberts, honorary doctorate of laws by Piedmont University. She's got a lot of experience working with Arabs and Jews and Christians from many national and denominational backgrounds, which has obviously equipped her to handle a lot of these topics, which are quite delicate. And she and her husband lived and worked for many years in Washington, D.C. And I hope, Susan, that you've been able to recover from your time in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for calling in today. How are you?
Very good, Steve. It's great to be with you today.
I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate our friends at Jones Literary and Mark and stuff putting this on my radar screen when they reached out to me about you. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about it. Shame on me that yesterday marked the 76th anniversary or memorial, whatever you want to call it. I'll go on the positive side, obviously, for the 76th anniversary of what? What are we talking about in terms of what happened on January 27th, 76 years ago?
Well, yes, 76 years ago, the Soviet Red Army actually liberated the death camp of Auschwitz. It was the most deadly of the camps during the Holocaust. And so the United Nations picked this date as the date that they would declare as an international day of commemoration of the Holocaust. So the date was intentional, but the real meaning of it is to commemorate the Holocaust at large. And you're right, it slips past us quite easily, this January 27th date.
Yeah.
But we wanted to take a minute to reflect on it and learn the lessons. There's critical lessons we need to learn from the Holocaust.
Yeah, but I think one of the biggest challenges we face, certainly here in the American context, is not only do we not remember history, we don't even really know history. And it's shocking, Dr. Michael, how many people, even here in America, especially younger people, are just clueless when it comes to the Holocaust, to Auschwitz, to everything that happened in the rise of Nazi Germany. So it's really kind of shocking and kind of sad that this isn't a bigger deal than it is. But for us as Americans and for us as Christians, help us to really kind of get in the right headspace, right spirit space, as we look at 76 years since that happened.
Yes. Well, it's so important that we have these points of contact to reflect and to remember and to learn from them, because you're right. There's a growing number of younger people in the United States that don't understand what was the Holocaust. They don't understand how many people actually died in the Holocaust, what the causes were. And what happens is when your new generations of leaders don't have that understanding of the Holocaust, then they're vulnerable to actually allowing it to happen again. And that's what we never want to happen again. And so that's why we need to repeat this horrible history, but learn the lessons from it so that it will never happen again.
And just in terms of when we have an opportunity to bring it up, Susan, what in terms of what actually happened, what would you say are kind of the main points that we should be willing to share and remind people of, especially people that aren't aware, just kind of some highlights or lowlights, if you will, from the Holocaust to kind of shake people out of their apathy or their ignorance?
Yes. Well, some of those lessons are that, you know, the Nazis were actually, originally Hitler was elected into office. And so there was this movement of hatred that he then fomented that it's the innocent, it's the silent bystanders that didn't speak up against it when they could. And then what happens is there comes a point where they can no longer speak against it because it's just so strong and it's so dangerous for them. And the lesson for us is to not allow these movements of hatred to begin at all and to speak up against them and stop it because, you know, there's this famous poem by Martin Niemöller that, you know, they came for the trade unionists and I wasn't a trade unionist, so then they came for the Jews and I wasn't a Jew and then they came for me and there's no one left to stand up for me.
Yep.
And that's the lesson here, that these movements don't just stop with the Jewish people. They don't just stop with one enemy, and they grow and they grow. And so in World War II, altogether, you know, over 50 million people lost their lives in that war. Mm. 6 million Jews lost their lives deliberately through the genocidal policies of the Nazis. But through the war in general, you know, many more millions died, and it's an atrocity. And so we need to stop hateful movements when we can. Now, the lesson for us right now in the United States is this. While the United States is largely a friendly territory for Jewish people, and we are many supporters of Israel in the United States, all the way into our government and our churches, and there's a lot of friendliness for Israel and the Jewish people. However, we have growing fringes that are anti-Semitic, and it's both in the far left and in the far right, and
That's right. They're growing,
and they're organizing on social media.
Yeah,
and this is our decision point. Are
exactly
we going
right.
to stand up and speak against it?
Great point. Susan, I'm going to put you on hold. We're talking to Dr. Susan Michael. She's the director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, and I appreciate that intellectual honesty. This can happen on the right as well as the left. Movements of hate, which kill. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you. Yesterday, 76 years since the Red Army liberated Auschwitz. And so that was yesterday. We have to remember that. That was not on my radar screen, but it should be on all of our radar screens. International Holocaust Remembrance Day, but also the whole week. And so we're just thrilled today to have a new friend on the program, Dr. Susan Michael, who's the director of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. She's been in dealing with these issues and invested in this for 30 years. And so taking the time today to look at the lessons of that, but also to broaden our conversation, because Susan, and thank you so much for your time today. You mentioned right before we hit the break just about a rising tide of anti-Semitism, and not just around the world, but also here in America. So I wanted to move over into that realm and help us to understand what's going on here. During the break for Facebook Live, I was saying, hey, listen, this is nothing new. Anti-Semitism is nothing new, but don't leave it in the past as if it doesn't happen anymore. So give us kind of an update, Susan, on anti-Semitism in America and around the world.
Yes, well, it has been in absolutely epic proportions in the Middle East and in the Muslim world. And it has also been very high in Europe, which is, you know, we consider Europe to be basically post-Christian.
Right.
And they've been very open to a resurgence of anti-Semitism once again, both from the left and the right and the Islamist immigrants into Europe. So it's been a real mix there. Here in the United States, we were sort of distant from all of that, but it was seeping in through our universities. And we had a lot of young people in university being taught really bad things about Israel, and then that spills over into anti-Semitism being about the Jewish people and anybody that supports Israel. And but we have now a real danger, and that's in social media. So social media is just rife with anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and accusations and tropes, and it's feeding all kinds of spheres. So it's feeding the far right, the far left, the students on, you know, in campuses, the young people that are all on social media. And you really have to kind of navigate it in social media. And if you're not aware of what it is or the dangers of it, then you may not even recognize it for what it is. And that's why we have felt a real need to train Christians and Christian leaders to recognize anti-Semitism. So we have a partnership with Yad Vashem in Israel. They're the Holocaust Memorial Museum there, and they also have an education wing. And we educate Christian leaders about anti-Semitism and the issues of the Holocaust and how to teach on it, how to articulate it, what to learn from it. And just this year, or just in the last 6 months, we've done a series of webinars here in America for Christian leaders to begin a very in-depth conversation with them about it, because it is a growing problem.
Yeah.
And one we need to be aware of and really stamp it out so it does not grow anymore in the United States.
Where can we access those types of resources, be it the videos or just some of the teaching, some of the online things you've done, and just some of the resources that are online in general?
Yes, well, first of all, they can visit our ICEJUSA.org website, and that and my blog is on there. I write on these issues all the time. We also built an educational website called IsraelAnswers.com. It has a whole section on anti-Semitism. It also has a whole section on why Christians should support Israel, and a lot of good information in that Israel Answers website.
Yeah, and just for all of you on the radio, for those of you on Facebook Live, you see that I just put those links in the comments section on Facebook Live. But if you want to grab that, just follow the websites that Susan is sharing. But you can also go to the Facebook Live page today for the show at thestevenobleshow.com. One of the interesting ways that you can stay abreast of this, if you people that are conservative, most of my audience is, Susan, if you guys listen at any regular basis to Shapiro, who's brilliant Jewish Orthodox Jew, practicing Jew, I should say, and he brings up that anti-Semitic flavor and angle because he's so sensitive to it for obvious reasons. And you just go back a few years, Susan, and he was the most threatened person on Twitter, and so much of that was anti-Semitic, and he talks about it because that's who he is, that's his his context and his worldview, and it's really helpful. I hadn't thought about it that much, but he can see it, he can sense it, he can smell it, and he brings that in a lot on his radio show and his podcast. It's been really helpful, but I think most of us, because we're not Jewish ourselves, we're not really paying that much attention to it.
Right, and he's fantastic, absolutely. But we write from a Christian perspective and from a Christian audience, because when it comes to anti-Semitism, you know, we can understand it as Christians. It's actually an evil. It's an evil force, and it's like a virus. As soon as you think you've stamped it out, then it just goes dormant for a while, and it comes back with a new face, a new aggressive strain, something else that you have to deal with. And we can trace it all through history, going all the way back to the Book of Esther. And it was in Greek history, and it was in the early church.
Yeah.
And then we had it in the Germany with the Nazis, and you'd think that we would have wiped it out after the Holocaust, and here it is back today. But it's like it's morphed, it's taken on a new face, and it became all about Israel, the Jewish collective, the Jewish nation.
Yeah,
and its goal was to make the people of Israel look so evil that the world would just wipe it out. It would bring it to an end, and that's always the end goal of anti-Semitism, whether they state it or not, whether you recognize it early on or not, the end goal is get rid of the Jews.
Which is so satanic, and I appreciate you putting it in frank language, because that is the reality of it, and it's so satanic, goes all the way back in our understanding as Christians. And so, and evil and satanic, and you just have to call it what it is. And there's, I think there's a lot of people, Susan, that hate Jews and don't necessarily understand the spiritual significance behind that. They're just pawns of the devil himself. But, in the church, and I want to unpack this some more in the last segment and talk a little bit about the politics of it. But do you think most Christians in America, it seems to me, Susan, that a lot of us don't really know what to do with Israel and the Jewish people. We don't quite know where they fit into our lives as modern-day Christ followers.
Well, that's absolutely right, because all of our teaching, even in our seminaries, our pastors, all the teaching is about the church, as though that's all that matters. And it's very important. I don't want to belittle the church whatsoever.
Sure, of course.
But they don't deal with God's covenant with Abraham, which is an everlasting covenant. And he said, They will never cease to be a nation before me. And he promised, even if you fall into sin and you're in exile, I will bring you back. And he's made these very clear promises to Jewish people. And the Apostle Paul said their calling is irrevocable. So sometimes in the church we even teach that the calling on the Jewish people has been revoked and they've been rejected and it's now all with the church. And the scriptures just do not teach that.
Yep, so, that's right. And so, but that takes knowledge and it takes teaching and proper teaching, which is one of our challenges. Susan, I'm going to put you on hold. We're talking to Dr. Susan Michael. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you today as we remember and we should celebrate what happened 76 years ago, just yesterday, January 27th, when the Red Army liberated the people in the from the Holocaust in Auschwitz. And of course, it went from there. And it's just incredibly dark, difficult, brutal history that we've got to remember. Most millennials, a lot of them don't even know what it is. They're literally clueless. They do not know. And a good chunk of them don't believe it was all fake, that the whole Holocaust thing now is made up. My buddy Bill on Facebook Live said over half of Gen Z's have social media denying the Holocaust. That didn't happen. That's just made up. Well, you got the blood of 5 or 6 million Jews to prove it. And of course, spiritual forces of darkness, Satan himself, would want you to think that never happened. Because then you think if it didn't happen, then why do we have to worry about it happening again? So you can see kind of the nefarious plot going in to all of that. That's why we're just pleased to have Dr. Susan Michael on with us today. She's the director of the International Christian Embassy. And Jerusalem has been dealing with these things for about 3 decades and just brings a wealth of knowledge and a passion for Israel. And we really appreciate you being with us today, Dr. Michael. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
You're very welcome. So we were kind of unpacking what role, just thinking about Israel, care and concern for our Jewish friends and neighbors should have in the life of a Christian here in America. So I want you to finish kind of helping us understand that. And then I want to make sure we talk a little bit about, as we're moving from a very pro-Israel Trump administration, what should we expect and what should we be paying attention to with a Biden administration? But let's finish up that part and just kind of helping us understand how we should look at Israel as Christians, followers of Christ that live in America.
Well, you know, it's foundational to the Bible, and it's foundational to our Christian faith, but we don't often realize that. And that when we're looking at the book of Genesis, Genesis 1 through 11, we see the creation of man, the fall of man into sin. He's in a very, very destitute place, no hope. And in Genesis 12, everything changes when God announces his plan to a man named Abram. And he says, if you'll follow me, I'm going to give you a land, I'm going to make you a great nation, and through what I'm doing with you today, I'm going to bless all the families of the earth. Mm. And the Apostle Paul says that verse, blessing all the families of the earth, referred to Christ Jesus. So God was announcing to Abraham his plan to redeem fallen mankind, but he needed a people to work through in the earth. And so he was going to create that people through Abram. And, you know, we as Christians, we are grafted in. We're the children of faith. We're the children of Abraham by faith.
Yep.
But he had a physical descendancy, the people of Israel, that God worked through to reveal himself to the world and to bring about the Messiah. And their role is not over. And he promised them that they would never cease to be a nation before him. And one day he would bring them back to their land. And one day the Messiah is going to come and stand on the Mount of Olives. And so they're back in their land now. And we as Christians, we need to support that and to bless that. Because God said, anybody that blesses you will be blessed, because God is with them and he's behind this. And we need to stand with them. At the same time, we need to be busy about the calling on the church. And the calling on the church is to take the gospel to everybody on earth, and we need to be very busy about that as well. But we need to support what God's doing with the Jewish people.
Yeah, it was really, I went to Israel for the first time about a year and a half ago, and just met Joel Rosenberg over there. He's been on the show many times since, and it's kind of like taking the Bible from two dimensions to three dimensions, go from a black and white film to a color film.
Exactly.
And it was really remarkable. Yeah, it was
your
just
Bible
really
just comes alive.
It just comes
Everybody
alive.
Everybody says that when they get over there.
Yeah.
Because they see it not only in its physical setting, but they're actually surrounded by prophecy fulfilled.
Oh, yeah. It's remarkable. But, you know, you mentioned the Mount of Olives, and the first time we got up there, and I'm looking around, and we're up in the hills above that, looking down, and then, of course, you're looking at the Temple Mount and everything, and then you see where the Muslims built the graveyard next to it to keep the rabbis out and the teachers out because they're not supposed to walk through a graveyard. I'm sitting there laughing, just going, they're clueless of what's going to happen here. But I also grieve because most people in Israel don't know Christ as Lord and Savior. They don't understand Isaiah 53. And so there was a grieving in my heart as I looked out over the city and thought, man, most of the people here are still rejecting Jesus and his offer. And it was heartbreaking, but also just technicolor impact on my reading of the Bible, which is really powerful.
And that brings us back to our subject, because the main reason that they don't know Christ is because through history of Christian persecution of the Jewish people, they came to believe that Jesus brings bigotry and hatred.
Yeah, man.
And so we have been very bad witnesses.
That's a really powerful reminder, and I appreciate you putting that in front of all of us, because we got to own that. It's kind of like the United States of America. I teach Constitution and Civics to high school age homeschoolers, and you have to own it. I mean, the United States of America is like all of us. I've got good stuff and bad stuff on my ledger, and you need to own it all. And the same thing for America, and the same thing for us as Christians in general. People want to brush off what happened in the Crusades or any other things in the past, but that's such a powerful reminder that we have to realize that from a Jewish perspective, they can look at Christianity and go, well, you guys talk about Jesus, but look what came along with that movement. And
exactly.
We have to be really sensitive to that. Yeah, that's a really
exactly.
great point. What about on the government? Go ahead.
Well, the Holocaust is just such an important part of their history and who they are and this wound. And we, a lot of times, are not even aware of our history. We don't even know how badly we treated them and how we prepared the way for the Holocaust. It could have never happened had it not been for centuries of Christian anti-Semitism beforehand. And so we do need to deal with that. And that's what the calling of the ICJ has been for 40 years, is to just begin a new relationship with the Jewish people.
Yeah.
One of love and compassion and unconditional love.
What a great point. What's the website for the ICEJ again, right quick?
It is ICEJUSA.org.
Wonderful. Now, what about the change of administration? Donald Trump, whether you loved him or hated him, was very supportive of Israel. It was amazing to see that over the last 4 years. Now we have a Biden administration. What's your thinking there, Susan, in terms of what we can expect?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Trump was, I think, the most pro-Israel president we've ever had. He did so much in terms of moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, of recognizing Israeli sovereignty on the Golan Heights, and just so many things. Now we have a new administration, and I don't think that they're actually going to undo any of these major things that Trump did. They've said they're going to leave the embassy in Jerusalem, and the these Abraham Accords, the peace accords that are being signed by Israel. They said that they're going to honor those, and I mean, who wouldn't? It's an amazing moment in history in the Middle
East.
So they'd be crazy not to encourage those and develop them. So our biggest concern is over the Biden administration's approach of Iran.
Yep, that's right.
They've said that they want to go back to the old approach of Iran, and it's very, very dangerous for Israel. It's dangerous for America. It's dangerous for the world. We cannot allow Iran to have nuclear weapons. And the Trump administration kept the pressure up. They kept the sanctions up. And as soon as they left office now, Iran is sort of showing off what they're
doing.
And they're going to take advantage of this weakness in the Biden administration. That's our biggest concern.
Yeah, and we not only, you know, first and foremost, our most powerful weapon is prayer, praying for the protection of Israel, praying for what God has been doing over there with these accords, and praying for godly influence with the administration, as we're supposed to be praying for these people anyway. 1 Timothy chapter 2. But we have to, because you know Israel is not going to just sit still and do nothing. And and that's with a lot of these accords, that's because they realize, hey, listen, our enemy isn't Israel, our enemy isn't America, our enemy is Iran. And all of a sudden, you're going to have a Biden administration trying to get back in bed with those guys. It's just horrific. So just to kind of wrap up, Susan, again, kind of help us to understand which websites and what resources, and just like with the Israeli Answers website, I want to make sure everybody knows where they can go and get help understanding all of this.
Yes, the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem's website is icejusa.org, and I invite them to look for my blog, and keep our people regularly updated on these issues. And then we have israelanswers.com. which is totally an educational resource that they can go in and look around and look up questions and find answers. And so we invite them to use our resources.
Wonderful. Dr. Susan Michael, thank you so much, my sister, for your time today and your expertise and your passion. We really, really appreciate you helping us understand this.
Sure. Anytime, Steve. It was great to be with you.
Great. Thanks so much. We'll do it again. That was Susan Michael, Dr. Susan Michael with the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. We'll be right back. From above, you know you make my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you tomorrow. Another big day. We are talking about with Dr. Susan Michael, the International Holocaust Remembrance Day and Week. The day was yesterday, January 27th. Tomorrow is the National March for Life. Usually that would be in person, enormous, hundreds of thousands of people there in Washington, D.C. But this year with COVID and everything else and turning Washington, D.C. into a police state for the most part, it's now kind of what they call a, what do we call these days? Virtual March for Life. That's tomorrow, Friday, January 29th at 12 p.m. Eastern time. If you go to marchforlife.org, F-O-R, by the way, marchforlife.org, you'll see it right there, and you have to RSVP to watch live to get the link. And it's like, well, how does that work? I don't know exactly. Tim Tebow's speaking. Carl Anderson's giving a keynote address. That'll be awesome. And it'll be informative. It'll be inspiring. It'll be worshipful. And mostly, I want you to do it, if you can, in order just to kind of keep your heart softened to the issue of life. It's kind of like our salvation. I often ask that with people. I said, when did you get over your salvation? Yeah, I got saved in 1994. And, you know, like you're telling everybody and you're totally on fire. And then 1995 and 1996 and 99 and 2003 and 2008. And it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, I came to know the Lord back in 94. And that's about it. So I know for myself I need to revisit my own salvation and revisit my own testimony to keep it fresh, because it's not something I want to get over. You know, your first anniversary is a big deal. Anniversary 7, not as much of a big deal. 11, 14. I'm using the odd numbers. You get to 20. Whoa, 25. Whoa, 50. Whoa. But the other ones, we've been married a long time. See what I mean? So I try to do the same thing with the issue of life on this show, which is regular. And especially once Love Life kicks back up in terms of everybody involved. Love Life Live, which occurs on Facebook Live via Zoom every Saturday. It goes year-round. But Love Life, the 40-year prayer journey on site at abortion clinics around the country with our friends at Love Life, which I've been involved with for several years now. LoveLife.org, that starts up on Saturday, February 13th. I just double-checked that. But just to get you kind of moving forward and thinking in the right direction, because I want you disturbed on this, and I want you broken, and I want you sensitive. It's I'm telling you, in the middle of a Holocaust, going back to what Dr. Susan Michael said, when 50 million people died, but 6 million Jews literally were exterminated. If you're in the world, in a church in 1941, and 6 million Jews are in the process of being exterminated, would one Sunday a year on Sanctity of Jewish Life Sunday be enough? Oh, yeah. It's Sanctity of Jewish Life Sunday. We got to pray for all those Jews that are being murdered. Is that enough? Of course it isn't. So we can make a pro-life profession of faith. But I hear James out there. Some are saying, okay, show me your pro-life faith by what you say. I'll show you my pro-life faith by what I do, which the least of which would be prayer and supporting financially, especially crisis pregnancy centers, resource centers. There's so many, Hand of Hope and Gateway and PSS and Durham and all over the place. In different markets, wherever you're at, you should know what pregnancy resources centers are in your market. Do you know who they are? Do you know who runs them? Have you ever been there? Have you ever given them anything? Time, money, anything? We should. You live in the middle of a Holocaust, okay? So I wanted to share this story with you, which I'm just warning you now. This isn't going to be easy to hear. Abortion is violence. This is in Live Action, liveaction.org. I put the link up on Facebook Live. Abortion is violence. Words and videos from inside the abortion industry. So I'll just do the words. Abortion is violence, it starts. No matter which type of abortion procedure is used, it's an attack on innocent human life through violent means. The sole purpose of abortion is to kill. Now, while some abortionists and abortion advocates deny this and accuse pro-lifers of terrorism for saying so, other abortionists have openly admitted the truth. The abortion pill starves a child of nutrients until he or she dies, and women have attested to the self-violence that the abortion pill will put them through. First trimester surgical abortion involves forcing open the cervix and inserting a suction catheter to vacuum the baby out in pieces with a force of 10 to 20 times that of a household vacuum. The baby's barely recognizable, but as seen in this particular image here, parts can be accounted for to ensure the abortion's quote-unquote success. In a third trimester induction abortion, the baby is injected with feticide, such as digoxin or potassium chloride, to stop her heart. A few days later, her mother will deliver her stillborn baby. In a D&E dismemberment abortion, that's what it is. Okay, and let me pause for a second. Ma'am, sir, if you're on this side of an abortion, that is not the unpardonable, unforgivable sin. As difficult as it is to think about this with babies and children and the blood that we could say, hey, I've got blood on my hands. The blood of Jesus Christ is so much more powerful than that. As powerful and as dark and as disturbing, as heartbreaking and grievous as it is for you personally and just the act in and of itself. The power of the blood of Jesus Christ is in a whole nother realm, more than enough to wash away that sin, to make you white as snow. Just remember that. Through the power of the blood of Jesus Christ, the forgiveness of sins, and the gospel, and of being born again. And if you're born again, by the way, and you're this side of an abortion, you've already been forgiven. You may not have forgiven yourself. And there's great resources out there, Bible studies and things to do that you can find to get some help walking through that, but you may be still carrying that bondage, and Jesus doesn't want that for you. He says, my yoke is light. My burden is easy. Come with me and I'll, he basically shoulders the burden for you. So remember that, please, as I share these things, which are the truth, okay? D&E dismemberment abortion, the most common abortion procedure used in the second trimester. The baby's arms and legs are ripped from her torso. She's decapitated and her skull is crushed. That is the very image of violence. Some abortionists are upfront about what they do. They label abortion as killing and violence and even share difficult moments they faced in actually doing their job. During a panel discussion at the National Abortion Federation annual meeting, abortionist Lisa Harris spoke about abortion images and what to tell those who question it. "I actually think," she said, "it should be less about denying the reality of those images and more about acknowledging that, yeah, that's kind of true. So given that we actually see the fetus the same way, and given that we might actually both agree that there's violence in here, let's just give them all, it's violence, it's a person, it's killing. Just acknowledge the truth," is her point. Harris even committed these abortions during her own pregnancy on babies about the same age as her own preborn child. She recalled one such abortion. She said, "I could see a small foot hanging from the teeth of my forceps." Now, this is really difficult. I'm sorry, but it's true. With a quick tug, I separated the leg. Precisely at that moment, I felt a kick, a fluttery thump-thump in my own uterus. It was one of the first times I felt fetal movement. There was a leg and a foot in my forceps and a thump-thump in my abdomen. Instantly, tears were streaming from my eyes without me, meaning my conscious brain, even being aware of what's going on. This is what Romans 1 is talking about being given over, okay? It was an overwhelming feeling, a brutally visceral response, heartfelt and unmediated by my training or my feminist pro-choice politics. Without the time to justify what she was doing, Harris was overcome with the truth of the violence of abortion and her role in killing innocent children. In a video from the Center for Medical Progress, former Planned Parenthood abortionist Deshaun Taylor described dismemberment abortions. Taylor compared the effort it takes to rip the limbs off of a preborn child who has been killed through digoxin and one who is still alive when the dismemberment begins. After complaining about having to transport any abortion survivors to the hospital, she added this: "Research shows that digoxin doesn't make the procedure easier in someone who is well-trained, but I have to tell you, anecdotally, my biceps appreciate when the dig works. It doesn't make me any longer to complete the procedure, but it takes more force. So I remember when I was a fellow and I was training, I was like, oh, I have to hit the gym for this. I need to hit the gym." Late-term abortionist Susan Robinson has described the horrific nature of abortion and admitted that other doctors look down on abortionists as the lowest of the low. They have good reason to. Medicine is supposed to be about healing, not killing. But as Robinson has demonstrated with her own words, abortion is violent killing. "The fetus is a tough little object," she said, "and taking it apart on day one is very difficult. You go in there and you go, am I getting the uterus or the fetus? Oh, good, fetus." Stabbing sound effect. "Well, what have I got? Nothing. Let's try again." An abortionist interviewed for the book In Necessity and Sorrow, Life and Death Inside an Abortion Hospital, spoke about how the older babies reacted to his attempt to kill them. "These babies, which are capable of feeling pain by the end of the first trimester, are aware of the invasion of their space. All of a sudden," he said, "one noticed that at the time of the saline infusion, there was a lot of activity in the uterus. It wasn't fluid currents. It was obviously the fetus being distressed by swallowing the salt solution." This is legal, friend. This is protected. This is codified, in many ways, worshipped by one party, not the other. Not that the Republicans are free of guilt here, but the Democrat Party, in their platform, supports it, praises it. Barack Obama said at a Planned Parenthood meeting, "God bless Planned Parenthood." Now, you support that party, you vote for that party, you give that party money. I'm not your judge, but you better ask the Lord what he thinks of that. I'm trying to be selective here, trying to get to the end. In an undercover video for CMP, abortionist Savita Jind at Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains spoke with undercover journalists posing as potential fetal body parts buyer. After meeting with Dr. Jind, the journalists were taken to the pathological laboratory at the abortion facility, and Planned Parenthood demonstrated the quality of fetal body parts. Buyer, was that a crack? Was that the little bits of skull? Medical assistant, I just want to see one leg. Here's a foot. Dr. Jind, it's a baby. Buyer, is that a heart? Medical assistant, I think so. Oh, here's the heart. My fingers will smush it if I get it on it. That's abortionists, people in the industry. They know what they're doing. They know it's murder. They do. They know the truth. The question is, do you? Do I? And what do we do with the truth that we know? Tomorrow, March for Life, marchforlife.org. Love Life picks back up on Saturday, February 13th, lovelife.org. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon.